Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Jake Lyman, Connor Newt here with you on this Thursday morning, talking some college football. And to help us do that, we head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in Bill Bender to the program from the Sporting News. Bill, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Really appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. So, Bill, we've had this conversation throughout the week this week, and it's interesting to kind of look at all the different layers around it when it comes to Arch Manning. Obviously, Texas is loaded. Arch Manning's an unbelievably high recruit. We know the history of his family, all that. What do you make of kind of the hype around him heading into this season? And I know you caught up with Peyton Manning last week and talked with him about some of that. What do you make of what Peyton Manning had to say about it and your expectations for Arch heading into this year?
Well, Peyton, as usual, measured and smart analysis. He believes that a third year with the same offensive coordinator, the same coach, is going to help Arch. And he brought that out. And when Peyton played at the Colts, he had two coordinators the whole time. When he played at Tennessee, obviously, same coach, same coordinator. I think that makes a difference. I saw on you guys' X page, is he overhyped? Well, the hype is uncontrollable. The appetite for Arch Manning was so high last year, and he was the backup.
Oh, yeah.
Every time he came in a game, I know at Sporting News we were throwing three or four articles up. I wrote an analysis piece off his start against Mississippi State because I was assigned that. So I don't know if he can meet the hype, because the hype is like anything I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, it's really interesting when it comes to that part of it, because I almost feel bad for the kid in some ways because of what he's going to be compared to when he starts there. But I also, Bill, I look at that roster. And if you're looking at national championship favorites heading into this year, you don't get too far down the list before Texas is on there, in my thought.
Well, for sure. They're number one in several publications. What an opener against Ohio State. That could easily be 1-2. And you're starting the season that way at noon in week one. So that's going to be an awesome game to watch. Last year when these two teams played, they sent 26 guys to the NFL draft. So we could look back on that game last year and that total could end up being 50 or 60. So, yeah, I think Texas, their schedule's tough, though, tougher than last year, especially in the SEC. So I think, for me, I read the reports. It's pure speculation. Peyton wouldn't bite on this question either. I wouldn't be surprised if Arch Manning stayed two seasons at Texas. And we get the best of Arch Manning next year.
Talking college football with Bill Bender from the Sporting News here on Robbie and Rex Road. Bill, I'm looking at your article from this morning predicting the 12-team college football playoff. You got Texas as the top overall seed. I'm interested to see Navy here as the Group of Five champion that gets in. What do you see from the midshipmen that would allow them to get into the college football playoff this year?
That would be awesome, first of all, to have a service academy in the playoff. Blake Horvath, dual at all quarterback. He got hurt last year, missed a little bit of time. But, they're not, run it every time, Navy. They can throw a little bit. And in that conference, I think they'll do well. If it's not them, you could go UNLV or Boise State out of the Mountain West Conference. One of the things in that playoff projections article that I did, and I'm sure all 12 teams are correct, by the way.
Oh, yes.
Seeing a lot of the same teams in there. And I think that's something that could easily happen, that you could get six or seven teams that were in the playoff last year come right back in.
Bill, what do you make of where Tennessee sits now in the aftermath of the Nico Iamaleava drama over the spring? You've got Joey Aguilar in there at quarterback now, and we'll see if Jake Merklinger in camp can make a run to be the starting quarterback, or if it's just going to be Aguilar heading into the season. But obviously a lot of drama in the spring, a college football playoff team last year, a lot of questions even beyond quarterback on the offensive side of the ball. So how do you view where Tennessee and Josh Heupel are heading into this year?
Well, I mean, they dropped a few spots. When you lose a quarterback like Nico, I mean, they were 10-3, and he was very efficient. Now you're bringing in Joey Aguilar, and how quickly can he catch up? Playmaking skills are there. I liked how Joey Aguilar played when they played Power Four schools. I would watch those games. North Carolina was one that stood out. But he'll have to cut down the interceptions, and in theory, in Josh Heupel's quarterback-friendly offense, he will. I think here's the struggle this year is, yes, Josh Heupel got patted on the back quite a bit after they let Nico go and taking a stand for college football, but does that taking a stand mean you go 7-5? Then there won't be as much applause at that point. So I do hope they do well. They are in that middle part of the SEC where everybody to me from LSU through A&M and Oklahoma, you got 10 teams ranked in preseason polls. All of them have questions, and all of them could be that third or fourth team in the SEC. I think after Georgia and Texas, he opens up, and that's why they're trying to get all these playoff berths.
Bill, I'll bring you to the other side of the state over here in Nashville with Vanderbilt coming off a huge year for that program, win 6 games, upset Alabama. Do you think they can sustain it this year? Obviously have Diego Pavia back under center, bringing back Eli Stowers, who's an NFL tight end prospect. Do you think Vandy can build on what was a great year last year and become bowl eligible again this season?
It's going to be tough. I mean, it's tough to replicate some of the things that they did, and this schedule is tough. But, and obviously Diego Pavia made some waves up here in Big Ten country with his comments a few weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
And my thought on that is very impressed with Diego in that Alabama game last year. I was impressed in the Texas game. Played very well in that game. They didn't win, but he played well. The way they play in the Big Ten is a little bit different. When you're going up against 5 defenses, Iowa, Michigan, High State, Penn State, that really give up more than like 17 points per game. It's a little bit tougher style. I think there are good quarterbacks in the Big Ten. I think Diego Pavia would be an effective quarterback in the Big Ten, but I was a little surprised he took a shot at like Nebraska. I didn't know if that just tells me that there's a whole generation of player that doesn't remember Nebraska, I guess in the 90s when I was growing up, and they didn't even have to throw the ball to beat you.
Yeah, no doubt about that. So, Bill, what do you make of where all this is maybe headed at this point when it comes to college football playoff expansion and potential automatic bids that could be associated with the Big Ten and the SEC and the debate with that right now? Obviously, I mean, this has been a changing landscape over the last 4 or 5 years at this point that we've talked with you about. But what do you make of kind of the latest installment of where this could all be headed with the college football playoff?
Well, I hope we get to 16 for the SEC and the Big Ten's sake. I think they should be in the front leading that charge so they can get all of their playoff caliber teams in the playoff. That's kind of how I would sell it. Now, my editor, he's a Vanderbilt grad. He wants to stay at 12, and I'm like, why? Well, so Alabama and Miami have, teams get left out. And I'm thinking, I would rather the teams get in, because one of the drawbacks of last year, and I know you guys probably felt this, was that first weekend of the playoff, that was on my timeline, was people complaining that Alabama, South Carolina, and Ole Miss weren't in the playoff. It literally, South Carolina would have crushed SMU, those type things. Well, if we go to 16, then all the teams that should be in, for the most part, are in. Miami would have been, Alabama is in. And then we play the first 2 rounds on campus. How cool would that be? Yeah. That everybody, that was the coolest part of last year, seeing that I was at Ohio State, Tennessee. That game was a lot of fun. Not for the Vols, but it was a lot of fun regardless.
Well, Bill, really appreciate your time as always. Thanks so much for taking time to be with us this morning. College football season right around the corner, so we're getting there. And we'll talk to you soon, my friend. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, that went quick, man. We could have talked for an hour. Thanks so much for having me. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Absolutely. Bill Bender, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Take more of your thoughts on what Bill had to say, 615-737-1025. I do want to get to the Arch Manning part of this, because we heard from Bill Bender there, and he talked with Peyton Manning last week about kind of the situation that Arch is walking into. There was another prominent voice in college football that maybe doesn't understand some of the hype around Arch Manning. We'll get into that coming up next. Alex Doherty from the Tennessean at 7:30. All that ahead, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Tune in to ESPN 94.9 The Fan tonight as the Nashville Sounds take on Jacksonville. Pregame at 5:50, first pitch at 6:05. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Sounds baseball on ESPN 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Appreciate Bill Bender from the Sporting News for being with us in the last segment. We'll take your thoughts on all things college football. Let's head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Adam in Portland to the program. Adam, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Hey, Robbie, man. Hey, you want to know what's funny, dude, is I'm sitting here with my 7-year-old last night, and his name's Peyton, and he's like, how did I get my name? And I'm like, there's a great football player here, man. Like, and he's awesome, and I loved him. And so that's where my head is with the Mannings, right? With this Manning, though, dude, like, there's so much pressure on him, Robbie. I'm kind of in lockstep with you on that. Like, I feel like he almost needs that second year that dude was talking about. Like, you, because they don't look the same, man. I thought yours was way better. And just him being athletic, like, it's not even, it's like he's not even from the same family. The only thing similar is the name on the jersey. So I hope he does well. Dude, I feel like there's going to be so much pressure. There's a good chance this could look like, you know, before it's, I don't want to say Deion's kid necessarily, where he comes out and, you know, we have all those problems. But at the same time, dude, like, it doesn't look like a Manning to me yet. So I feel like there's a lot of unnecessary pressure on him.
Yeah, thanks for calling him. It's going to be really interesting. First off, the roster that Texas had this year is just loaded. I mean, they're going to be either number one or number two heading into the year, depending on who you ask. The opening game they've got with Ohio State, I mean, it could be awesome. So I'm looking forward to that. You know, Arch Manning, look, he's a very high-level recruit. Obviously, his last name, there's a lot that comes with that. I would agree. Like, he doesn't play like Peyton or Eli. He's different that way. He's more athletic. I mean, if you go and watch Archie back in the day, he kind of looks more like that, right? Like the athleticism that he brings to the table. It's going to be really interesting to see how he plays here. Now, you know, Steve Spurrier made a lot of noise the other day. He was on another duly noted podcast, and they had a YouTube stream, and I watched some of it because anytime I get a chance to watch Steve Spurrier talk, it's pretty funny. So they were just kind of spitballing out there and talking about a bunch of other random stuff, like Georgia track and like just all this random stuff. And somehow, you know, Arch Manning in Texas came up. And here was the quote that really got people going from Steve Spurrier. He said, quote, "Most people are picking Texas to win the SEC in football. They've got Arch Manning already winning the Heisman too. My question is, if he was this good, how come they let Quinn Ewers play all the time last year?" And he started talking about, like, you know, Quinn Ewers was a 7th-round pick, and he was injured all the time. He's like, well, if Arch Manning's that good, why in the world was Quinn Ewers playing for Texas last year? So that has got people buzzing around the state of Texas and around the world of college football, Jake.
This is why when there were lots of people on the text line and lots of Titans fans saying, trade out of the number one pick, and we can get Arch Manning next year. I'm like, well, the guy who just started over Arch Manning was he was not even in contention to be a day two pick. I like Arch Manning, and I think he's going to be good. But to act like he was this shoe-in number one overall pick when he started, what, 3 or 4 games in his college career, it's crazy. And it is a name thing. If his name was Arch Smith, I don't think he's being talked about the way that he's being talked about right now. I like him, and I do think that he probably does need 2 years, and who knows, maybe in his second year he does take a big step and becomes the guy that everybody hopes he's going to be. But acting like Arch Manning is going to jump in this year and immediately be a Heisman-winning quarterback feels like it's more based on his last name than it is based on anything he's actually done on a football field.
Well, I'm looking at the odds right now to be the Heisman Trophy winner this year. The favorite for the Heisman Trophy, according to FanDuel Sportsbook, is Arch Manning at plus 700.
I don't get that.
Garrett Nussmeier right behind him. You got Klubnik, Jeremiah Smith, who should be in that conversation.
Yep.
So they're kind of all jumbled up together. But the betting favorite right now, according to FanDuel, to win the Heisman Trophy is Arch Manning. And I'm also looking on FanDuel for the NFL draft next year. And the favorite to be the number one overall pick is Arch Manning at plus 230 on FanDuel Sports.
Plus 230?
Yeah.
Man.
So you've got FanDuel as having Arch Manning to be the favorite to win the Heisman and to be the number one overall pick in the draft next year.
Is that FanDuel maybe just trying to sucker people into making that bet? I'm like, hey, he's the favorite. You should bet on him. I would be stunned if Arch Manning is the number one overall pick next year.
I would probably be more surprised by that. I don't think I would be all that surprised if he wins the Heisman, mainly because I think Texas's roster is really good, and I think they're going to be really good. And look, I think some of the hype is getting out of control a little bit with him, but I do think he's going to be pretty darn good.
I think he's going to be good, and I think Texas is going to be really good.
Yeah, so when you have that combination of a player who I think is going to be good and a team that has a chance to be electric, the Heisman part of it, he's going to be in that conversation if they're a 10, 11, 12-win team.
Right.
So he's going to be in that if they're that. I keep coming back to everybody just assumes that he's coming out after this year and going to the NFL when his family has not done that. Eli stayed all 4 years at Ole Miss. Peyton stayed all 4 years at Tennessee. And I realize he's not Eli Manning and he's not Peyton Manning. But that's kind of been the way they've operated, and he's been different than a lot of modern-day college athletes. He did not play at Texas much over the course of his first couple years there, and now he's getting his shot, but he didn't transfer. If you believe, I mentioned Bill Bender. He talked with Peyton Manning last week, and I read that piece at the Sporting News, and if you listen to Peyton, it was transferring never even entered his mind. He likes Texas. He wants to go to school at Texas. He likes Sarkisian. So, he's been incredibly patient throughout this entire approach. And I don't think that that's just going to change next year. I guess if he goes out and he throws for 400 yards a game and they go win the national championship and he wins the Heisman Trophy and he looks at it and he says, I don't know how to get him a whole lot better than what I just did this year. Then I guess he could come out and be different at that point. I feel like there's way too much just assuming that he's coming out in the NFL draft next year.
And you do make a good point of if he is the quarterback on the best team in the country, he's going to be in the Heisman conversation. And if he wins the Heisman, how often does a Heisman winner who's draft eligible stay in college? I get that he's a little bit different because of his family, but you could make that argument that he could come out if he does have a season like that. I think Nussmeier is probably a better quarterback. I think, as one of our texters says, Lenora Sellers may end up being a better quarterback than Arch Manning. But I do think if Arch is in the conversation, there's a chance that he could take home the Heisman Trophy. And again, it's who wins the Heisman has been in college for 3 years and doesn't go into the draft. So maybe there's an outside.
Not a long list. Not a long list for sure, but I'm really fascinated to see how he does this year. Look, it's not all the last name.
He's a good player.
He's recruited. He's ranked that high for a reason. Yep. He's pretty darn good, but we'll see what that looks like on the college level. Really, this whole quarterback class, if you want to throw Arch Manning in there, Drew Aller.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see what he looks like.
He's had his moments.
Klubnik's getting a lot of buzz.
Yeah.
I need to see more from Klubnik in big games than I've seen for me to really buy some of that.
Right.
Nussmeier, we'll see. Sellers, I think, has a chance to be really good. And then people have just totally forgotten about Carson Beck, who was going to be the number one pick if you ask people last year heading into the season. And now he's at Miami. We'll see what that looks like for him down there. But got to throw him in the mix, too.
It's kind of a wild card year when it comes to quarterbacks. I could see pretty much any of those guys you named right there being the number one pick next year, but I also could see any of them coming, or whoever has eligibility, coming back for another year because they didn't have a good season. So we'll see. Connor bringing up the college football game a couple segments ago. My favorite Arch Manning story is last year when he turned down being in the game because he wanted to focus on football. and all the memes came out of like, does Arch Manning think that every time someone boots up Texas that he's got to go,
he's got to go play for him?
Yeah. Like, that was so funny. It's like, no, I'm not going to be in the game. I want to focus on real football. I'm like, well, you don't really have to do anything.
Yeah, you just got to sign something.
You just got to sign a paper.
It's all good. It's all good on that front. Alex Doherty from the Tennessean will be with us coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on all things Predators and the NHL draft. The Rob rant coming up at 7:45. All that ahead, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Jake Lyman, Connor Newt here with you on this Thursday morning. We are one day away from the NHL draft and finding out who the Predators will select at number 5 overall. And to help us talk about that and all things Nashville Predators, we head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in our friend Alex Doherty, who does an outstanding job covering the Nashville Predators for the Tennessean. Alex, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. It's a big week, huge week for people who love the NHL draft, which I love. So,
big week, a little bit of a different draft this year, decentralized, which apparently they're getting rid of after 1 year. So we'll see what that looks like as they move forward.
Yeah, last year at the Sphere in Las Vegas was pretty epic. I'm not going to lie. So I'm just going to be sitting there at Bridgestone Arena, which is fine, but you know it's not the Sphere in Las Vegas.
Well, you should go back to the Sphere this year and see if they'll turn on the draft for you.
Maybe I'll do that.
Got a request to make. So, Alex, obviously you were there the other day for the Barry Trotz press conference, and I thought his answer to you about, you know, the idea of Porter Martone and him being a winger and how do you weigh that versus being a centerman was really interesting. He went on with Jared later in the day and said, you know, his preference would be to draft a centerman. So what do you make of kind of that debate where the Predators could land in that? And if it's like Martone and Hagans or Martone and Frondell or whoever that you're picking between at 5, how do you see that going if you're the Predators?
Yeah, that to me was, I think, is the crucial question. Assuming that they're going to pick at 5, which I think they will, not going to trade it or anything. If you know, and Barry Trotz said he sees the picks, you know, 3 through 8 as all pretty similar players. Or at least in terms of their talent level, they're all different players. But in terms of their talent level, 3 through 8, you could kind of interchange, and you're going to get a good player no matter what. So in that respect, you know, what is the deciding factor between, you know, a winger that could be a really good goal scorer? I mean, Porter Martone has a lot of comparisons that are very intriguing. I think, like, I mean, you could compare him to like a Philip Forsberg. I don't think he's quite like Philip Forsberg, but that's sort of like the similar power forward, good skater, good score type player, but plays wing. And then there's obviously James Hagans, who is smaller and quicker and maybe a little bit shiftier, but could run into issues with size. But you know, there's plenty of undersized, you know, 5'11", 5'10 centers in the league that are very good. So what is the deciding factor? And it sounds to me like he said, if it comes down to position as the tiebreaker, they would go with the position, but only if the two players are really close. So if they view Martone and Hagans as very close, I think they're going Hagans because of the center position. However, at the very end of it, he seemed to suggest at the end of that answer, he said, you know, Martone would be a really good pick at number 5. And
he did say that.
I kind of interpreted that as they think Martone is going to go higher than 5. I think they think that maybe he's going to go at 3 or 4, to either Utah or
Chicago.
Yeah. And I can definitely see that. I mean, I think Martone's a great talent. So, and I think those teams could use, you know, the bigger scoring winger as opposed to a smaller center. So I think that's the real important question. And then, but the other thing is, you know, there's other guys that are on the board that could be there that, you know, assume Hagans and Martone are there. They could still go for someone like a Brady Martin, or they could go for Caleb Denoye, or, you know, there's all kinds of options there. I just think that he did indicate that if it's a tiebreaker, they would look at position as the tiebreaker, which I think is important.
Alex, with the decentralized draft, how are we going to know when Barry's on the phone this year?
I am heartbroken that I cannot reveal that information anymore. That was my favorite part of watching. And you know, if they go back to it in a couple years, it will return. But that was, you know, I think it was, that's the part about the draft that I think was really fun, is that they're all on the floor. You can see where all the GMs and scouts are running around. You can see movement. You can see phone calls happening. That made it very unique. You know, you didn't get that. You don't get that in the NFL draft, and I don't think you get that in the NBA draft. But that's too bad. But it's okay. We'll just have to imagine that Barry Trotz is on the phone a lot over the next couple days.
Well, if he is on the phone, do you think that there's a scenario where those two later first round picks, one or both, maybe get packaged in a trade, or do you see the Preds sticking and picking and making three first round picks tomorrow night?
I think that they probably make three first round picks. The value of those last two picks, it really kind of worked out where they're almost equal, right? So 23 and 26 are, you know, the relative value of those is really close. I mean, maybe they do something where they drop back out of 26 to get another extra pick in the third round, or maybe they get another pick in the 26 draft, which they like to do. They like to push the draft selection to the later draft, especially since next year's draft is supposed to be a little deeper. I could see that, but I do think they'll make the pick at 23 because, you know, they had the pick at 22 last year and got Igor Surin, who they really like. So they know they can get a good player at 23. Maybe they drop out of 26, but I do think that they'll make at least two picks, probably all three. The rest of the draft is, it's, you know, draft picks in the NHL, the drop-off after the first round and even the early second round in terms of pick value is just so drastic. I mean, yep. The values of a third-round pick are just, I mean, they're just almost nothing. I mean, it's you're taking a real shot in the dark on a third-round pick. So if you have four shots in the dark, it just doesn't really do much for you. So I think they'll probably make the picks, but you know, the first round is what matters, right? If you nail the first round picks, you're setting yourself up for success. That all the good teams in the NHL that are good now have nailed their first round picks, and the Predators have not, and that's why they're not as good right now. So they need these first round picks to land.
So Alex, to that point, you know, Trotz was talking the other day about the roster that he's got. And, you know, he said a couple of times that, I mean, you can't tell me that Ryan O'Reilly and Forsberg and Yossi and all these guys that we know aren't good players and that there's not some level of bounce back in him, which I understand to some degree. I also look at where they're at right now at center ice. And, you know, The Athletic came out with a piece the other day ranking center ice quality throughout the league. They were 32nd in that ranking, which is about right. I mean, when you look at it, it's about right. So, yeah. Like, until you, like, dramatically fix that, it's hard for me to get to them contending for anything. So, with all that being said, you know, I'm with you. I'm interested to see what they do with these first-round picks. But beyond that, how active do you think the Predators could or should be over the next couple of weeks here, free agency, trade, whatever you want to call it, to build for next year's roster, which Barry Trotz seems to think that they can get back to being a playoff team and maybe being competitive?
Well, I think it's interesting that Barry Trotz has come out and said multiple times now they're in kind of win-now mode. They do think that they can bounce back and be instantly competitive, and they're worried about this team rather than the team in a few years. However, in the same breath, he kind of talks about they're not going to be super active in free agency. So they're not going to be in on Mitch Marner. They're not going to be on John Tavares, Nikolaj Ehlers. They're not going to be on – it doesn't sound like they'll be in on Aaron Ekblad, although that's probably because he's probably going to re-sign in Florida. So, like, you know, if he's telling the truth, if Trotz really thinks this year is really worth going for again, you know, why is he not adding another piece? Why is he not adding another center? Why is he thinking that, okay, this year we'll just go with Fedor Svechkov as the second-line center, which to me just kind of has shades of last year, well, we think Tommy Novak can be the second line center.
Right.
Nothing against Fedor Svechkov, but I mean, you and I both know, like, when they went into last year thinking Tommy Novak was going to be the second line center, it was like this is a huge question mark. Svechkov will be maybe a little less of a question mark because he's shown that he can handle some things there, but I certainly not. He's not going to be the one to unlock Steven Stamkos and put him back, bring him back to being a 40 goal scorer again. So, yeah, it's like it's hard to believe I think you made the point recently that, you know, this is sort of what's he supposed to say? He's not going to go up there and say, yeah, sorry, Stamkos, sorry, Marcus O and Shea and Forsberg, but we're worried about the 2029 Predators. We're worried about what happens when Igor Surin comes over here, because they don't even know who Igor Surin is. They're ready to win now. So he has to say that. At the same time, they've got $14 million in cap space. Why not go try to sign somebody really good? Why not get in on the Nikolai Ehlers sweepstakes? Why not try to go after Brad Marchand? You know, these are Brock Besser. These are just things that I think show you that I don't think Trotz is fully convinced that this year is just going to be an instant success. So he's not going to commit any more money to it, which he probably needs to if he really believes that.
Alex, last thing for you here. Is it bad that as we sit here a day before the NHL draft, the pick that I feel the most certain about them making in terms of like a player that I think is going to be a Nashville Predator is Blake Fiedler? It's got Predators written all over it. They've got two picks in the 20s. That's right around the range where most people have him going. Obviously a connection with his father to the organization. He's from Nashville. It's too perfect. Blake Fiedler is going to be a Predator.
You know, when I was leaving the Vegas draft last year, and I was walking out of the Sphere, I was looking at the 2025 draft a year ago, and I started seeing, wait, Blake Fiedler, I know that last name. And then I started looking at, oh, yeah, this guy's going to be pretty good. Let's keep an eye on him. So then over the course of the year, you start seeing him climb up and climb up in the rankings. And then I was like, you know what? Let's just commit to it. We've got to get this guy drafted by the Nashville Predators. And it turns out, he would not only be the first Nashville-born first-round pick, or at least he's going to be the highest pick by, you know, of a Nashville-born player, because, of course, he was born in Nashville. He would be the first Nashville Predators fan drafted by the Predators, because he, you know, was a fan of his father when he played. And then, obviously, when Vernon Fiedler came back to the Predators in 2017, he was 10 years old and was right there rooting him on. And he has said multiple times, you know, Vernon told me, that no matter where he played, he was always rooting for the Predators. So when he was with the Dallas Stars and the New Jersey Devils and everything, he was rooting for the Predators, his son was. So I think it would be a great story. And by the way, he's also pretty good. He's a 6'4" right-handed defenseman who would fit perfectly with the Predators right now. So I hope it happens.
Go ahead and print the jersey. It's happening tomorrow. I'd be stunned if it doesn't. Alex, great stuff, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. Going to be fun tomorrow. I'll see you at the arena, and we'll talk to you soon.
That's right. Y'all take it easy.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Alex Doherty does a great job covering the Predators for the Tennessean. We'll have the Rob rant coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob rant.
Now!
Now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 the game. It is time for the Rob rant here on the program. We'll take your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. All right, so the NHL is in discussions with the NHLPA. They're trying to put together their new CBA. And apparently things are going pretty well, and they're not that far away from a new CBA between the NHL and the NHLPA. Which, if you've been a hockey fan long enough, anytime these two start talking and they're making progress, it's a good thing, because in my lifetime they've had two lockouts, and lockouts have been a problem in this league. It was a full season back in 05, and they missed basically half the year in 2013. So lockouts have been a problem in this league, and frankly, you know, there's a lot of things going right for hockey right now. You know, there's the Four Nations tournament that was an unbelievable success. You know, the game, I think, is at a really good place. The Olympics are coming up next year, best on best. It's going to be awesome to watch. So, like, not doing anything to screw all that up would be great if you're the NHL and the NHLPA. So I think that's going to happen. Now, this was kind of, at least to me, I had not really heard much about this until the last day or two. And now it looks like it could either be a part of this CPA or CBA, or at least is on the table and being heavily discussed. And that is the idea of going from 82 regular season games to 84 regular season games. Now, I saw this, and Kevin Weeks put this out there. I think Greg Wyshynski put this out there. about the idea of going from 82 to 84. And basically, like, the major shift there would be you would make the preseason quicker. Which, look, I've talked to players on the Predators. I've talked to players throughout the league. The majority of them will tell you they need one, maybe two preseason games, and then they're ready to go. Now, for the organization, it's a little bit more valuable than that because you can, look, especially early in the preseason, go look at some of these lineups. There ain't very many NHL players in there. There's a lot of taking a look at, you know, some of your draft picks or some of your prospects and seeing how they play at that level. So there's value in it from that perspective. I think most fans do not care at all about the NHL preseason, so we're okay with the idea of taking some of those away. But I saw this get posted yesterday, and the reaction is basically what I thought it would be. 82 games seems to me to be enough in the NHL. I don't think we need to go to 84. I mean, I think you can limit the preseason if you really want to and still have 82 games. Now, I know that these owners and everybody involved, like, if they could get, you know, one more gate, no matter where it is in the preseason for money, they'll take it. So I understand the money part of this. But just from the fan part of it, like, I don't really love the idea of going to 84 games. Like, we've been at 82 for a long while at this point. You kind of judge records and seasons and point totals and stats and all these things based off the 82-game schedule that we've had for a while now. And is it a huge change if they go to 84? No. Like, I don't think that's as dramatic of a change as the NFL going from 16 to 17 and then they're eventually getting to 18. It will happen. It's two more games in the regular season in hockey. It's not the world's biggest deal. Like, I'm not that upset about it. But I do look at it and I say, I still think we're missing, to me, what I've talked about several different times here is kind of like a big part of this as to why your ratings sometimes don't look great in the playoffs. You know, Pierre LeBrun's been banging his drum for a while. Like, start the season earlier. Start the season earlier, and by the time basically the calendar is ending in May, that's when you should be ending your cup final, like May 30th, May 31st. That's when you should be ending your cup final. And I understand that part of it. I'd actually probably go the other way, and I know they'll never do this, so I'm the only one that probably thinks this, and that's fine. I think the more of your season that you can have that doesn't directly compete against football, the better off you are in the United States of America. You know, they start in October. And look, when they start the NHL regular season, Jake, the fact of the matter is we're right in the heat of college football, right in the heat of the NFL, and the NFL goes until mid-February at this point. So I think go the other way, start a little bit later. I'm not saying you have to start by like Christmas, but start in like November. Go a little bit later and have more of your regular season not going head-to-head with the NFL and football. That would be the way I would do it. That would also mean probably stretching your cup final out until July, which is why they will never, ever, ever, ever do this, and I'm the only one that thinks it, but that's okay. But that's the latest in the NHL is they are apparently thinking about adding two more games of the regular season, 84.
It just feels unnecessary to add two more games. I mean, it feels like such an even number, even though 82 is kind of random also, but you get the same amount as the NBA. It's right about half of the MLB. It just feels right to be 82 games. 84 looks weird, but I get what you're saying. For the casual sports fan who maybe isn't a diehard NHL fan, starting it as late as possible is better because most people are locked in on football pretty much through all of January into February at this point before they change their sights to the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL. So I would be with you, actually, about moving it back. The expansion of everything just makes no sense. And I know Connor is one of the main opponents of expanding the NCAA basketball tournament.
God, no, don't
which
do it.
I heard that that's coming down soon if they do it.
Yeah.
76 teams.
Well, let me say this. I would rather them expand the regular season from 82 to 84 than expand the Stanley Cup playoff.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't want any part of this stupid NBA play-in stuff that they do, which I know some people floated out in the NHL. Gary Bettman, to his credit, has really had no appetite for that so far. I don't want, because we're at 32 teams now, you expanding the playoff to 20. Like, you know, you're still at 16. Half the league makes the playoff. That's enough. I don't need it to be any more than that. So that's why I'm not that upset about this. Like, some people are. Some people are really mad about the idea of going from 82 to 84. Like, we got Sean on the text line that says hockey needs like 10 less games rather than two more. And I understand that point of view. I really do. They're not going to have less games because of the money that's involved with it. So I think that's something we probably need to understand. But I would rather them expand the regular season by a couple games than get any ideas in their head about ruining the Stanley Cup playoffs.
For sure. I think the NHL has found the perfect format for the Stanley Cup playoffs. And like, I think baseball was great too back in the day when it was just four teams made the playoffs. And I get that the money is always going to win out. I think baseball has hurt their postseason product by expanding the playoffs. I think the NHL would be doing the same thing. Everybody loves the Stanley Cup playoffs. Like, casual sports fans who don't follow hockey will watch hockey because the Stanley Cup playoffs are just great television. You don't need to change anything about that.
I got one text that says, I couldn't agree more with you, Robbie. Hand the cup out in early July, and there's only 1 month of no sports on TV until preseason football. I agree. That's how I would do it. I just know they're not going to do that. Like, I don't think the NHL wants to go into July. And look, I know that would also affect – like your typical, like July 1st is typically when free agency starts. Like, you wouldn't be doing that anymore. I understand all that. I mean, I don't think they're going to do that. I think if anything, they might eventually start a little earlier than they do. I just view it through the lens of try to compete directly with football less. That should be everybody's goal. Like, I think the NBA, this is also a take I don't think will ever happen. I think the NBA should start on Christmas Day. I think that should be opening day in the NBA. It'll never happen, but that's when I think the NBA should start.
I'm with you. You do that, and then you could have the finals in August and the draft right. You can keep
draft
your
right
draft
there.
And free agency right after.
And by the way, the NFL's getting ready to start
right
at that point.
And the NBA would basically own July and August. It would make sense, but they'll never do that.
615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. We're going to get into the Titans coming up next, and we'll get a little bit into a conversation that I had with Stilly yesterday. And my general question for Connor, for Jake, for all of you is Brian Callahan doomed as Titans head coach walking into this year? We'll get into all that. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game.